Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today I am so excited to have a very good friend and fantastic legal marketer on the show. Deborah Ferrone is on the show today. Deborah, for those of you that don't know her, is the former CMO of two prestigious law firms, Cravath, Swaine & Moore and Devevois & Plimpton. She is considered one of the leaders in the legal marketing field. And the reason that we're having Deborah on the show today is she just published a new book called Best Practices in Law Firm Business Development and Marketing with PLI. And the book provides valuable insights and actionable advice for anyone looking to grow their business or to improve their practice. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you, Guy. I'm thrilled to be part of it. I've been listening to your podcast since you've started it, so I'm really excited to be here, and it's a great pleasure to be able to talk about the book and legal marketing, probably my favorite topic, legal marketing.
Awesome. Well, we are delighted to have you. Before we jump in, give us a little bit of an idea. How did you get into legal marketing? How did you decide to get into legal marketing, and sort of what has been your career path?
Well, I guess like most people who started in it early, I had no idea what it was, but I always loved marketing professional services. And when I started out at a public relations agency many years ago, we represented Milbank, and I just thought it was fascinating to be on the phone with these brilliant partners and get to know their practice. And I kind of kept my eye on what was going on in the legal marketing area. I was recruited then to Towers Watson, which at the time was Towers Perrin, a management consulting firm, and really enjoyed that. Management consulting is just a great basis for anything that you want to do later on with strategy. And at that point, I had heard about Debevoise starting to look for their first marketing person, and I immediately called a recruiter, or he called me. I'm not quite sure which the order was, but we connected, and that was really my first job in legal marketing, working at Debevoise and eventually becoming their chief marketing officer. So it was a great opportunity, and I was very fortunate. A lot of it was just good timing that at Debevoise there were some very forward-thinking partners that really wanted to run the firm like a business and knew that marketing would play a role in that. So that was about how I began with all of this.
And then from Debevoise, you went on to Cravath, and now you have your own company doing consulting. Talk a little bit about what you're doing today.
Well, I'm having such a ball working with a number of firms. I can probably only take 3 or 4 clients at a time because it's just 2 people doing this, me and a wonderful colleague. And we're working with various firms on strategy projects. So it could be anything from strategic plan for the firm. It could be a practice plan for a number of practices that need some help and redirection. It could be looking at their marketing department and how it functions or a particular function within the marketing department. And although I am not a recruiter at all, I've placed a few people in C-level positions just as part of the overall assignment that I've had. So it's really been a wide range, mainly working with firms in California and on the West Coast or New York, some in Texas, but mainly the two coasts. And it's just been wonderful. And between that, I keep on calling it my other client. My other client is the book and working on the book, which was a lot of fun, a ton of work, much more work than I ever thought it would be. But I interviewed more than 60 people, including CMOs, heads of law firms, really the innovators in the profession. I interviewed you, thankfully. You helped me quite deal with it. And you were great in putting a whole frame of reference to the book. But the book really felt like a client, and it was a big project, and I'm thrilled that it's done.
That's great. So why did you decide to write this book?
You know, I've always loved reading and writing. I'm the kind of person that, you know, always has too many books filling up their home and has to figure out who I'm going to give them to at the end of the year. I just read Michelle Obama's book, and that one I'm not giving away. That was just so wonderful. But I've always really enjoyed that, and I've always loved writing. I thought maybe one day I would write a book, but PLI actually had approached me, and they have an incredible books division where they really publish things that are of need to the legal community and the legal business community. And they had asked, they said, look, it's been a while since anyone really wrote an overall perspective of what was going on in legal marketing. What do you think? And I thought, this is a great opportunity to write something. So I wanted to just focus on a couple of the best practices that I knew were out there and really trying to hone in on what people were doing for business development that I thought was exceptional, what people were doing as far as firm leadership that I thought was really notable, and how rainmakers developed business. And so there's a wide range of areas covered in the book, but what I really tried to focus on was who, in my opinion, was doing it best. And I know that I couldn't cover every firm that was best in every category, and there, in no way was I ranking it, but I wanted to give people some food for thought about what really the best practices were that were out there, both in the U.S. and in Europe. And I spoke a little bit with some folks in London, and that helped inform this as well. So I hope people enjoy it, but it was great fun to write a book. It really, a lot of work, but great fun. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to read it. So you mentioned that in writing the book, you spoke with more than 50 managing partners, general counsel, CMOs, and other legal marketing and business development experts. What were some of the most interesting interviews that you had, and why were they the most interesting?
That's such a great question, because honestly, every interview that I had was really eye-opening. There were some people who responded in writing, but for the most part, they were done either in person or on the phone. And I was so impressed with the people who were in leadership of these firms and what they do. I thought Mitch Silkey was incredible at ORIC, and hearing him talk about innovation and why firms needed to innovate and some of the ideas and the unique things that ORIC is doing for innovation were really wonderful. I thought Beth Wilkinson and Alexandra Walsh, who have their firm, Wilkinson, Walsh & Eskovitz, were really just so good as far as strategy and really focusing on what matters to them, which is high stakes, important litigation. They're not trying to be everything to everyone, but they're really focused and doing really well in one particular area. Another person that stood out, of course, is the great Bob Gunderson of Gunderson Detmer, and they also have a great focus on what really matters to them, which is representing venture capital, whether it's the folks who are trying to get venture capital, the young entrepreneurs, the people going public, and also the funders, the people who are giving money to these new ventures. So there were a number of people, Henry Nassau at Deckert was great, Barry Wolf at Weil Gotshal. They were all really inspiring. They could have been interviews that went on forever. You know, I spoke with these folks at Prior Cashman who have an incredible women's program, and I had a chance to sit in on one of their sessions. And it was just so special to see Diane Figuera DeCharmi and how her partners kind of work as role models to really show these women in the firm what matters most. And I spoke with Stephen Brill, which was a bit intimidating, but once I found him, it was a great experience.
That must have been fascinating.
It really was. I mean, he was the battery that started this modern legal profession, wasn't he?
Yep, absolutely. So how did you start to even write the book? I mean, you know, I've done it before, and like you said, it is a lot of work. So how did you go about organizing it, and did you have any help?
I remember having dinner with friends from, actually, there's a wonderful group that I'm friendly with ever since high school, and we were talking about what we were doing, and I just signed the contract with PLI, and someone brought up the fact that, oh my gosh, you know, you could have writer's block and at some point, and that could be a problem. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is nonfiction, but what if I have writer's block? So I came home and I attacked it like I would any other project. You know, I had a spreadsheet and I figured out what was my outline, what was my content, who did I need to speak with in order to get certain chapters done, who were the experts in the area, and who did I think was doing kind of innovative work. And so I just kind of dove in. And PLI was incredible. They really helped me with fact checking and they also checked quotes. And so that was a huge help. I didn't have a writing assistant. I had a number of people review the book. I had a friend's daughter who's incredible, who's Melanie Stammelman, who did a great job at reviewing it, Katrina Dewey at LawTrack, and also reviewed it, and she's a genius editor. So it did take a village, and it does take a village to do one of these things.
So let's talk a little bit about your shift from being a CMO to basically running your own business. What was it like shifting gears from leaving a firm that is noted as the world's most prestigious law firm with all types of services, a beautiful office, a large staff to support you? And now here you are starting your own practice with, I guess, you at first and now a team of two. How was that process?
It was so interesting and such a good learning experience for me. I missed so much about Cravath as far as the services and the ability to ask someone for help. You know, there's no IT desk when you're out on your own. But I was also amazed at how many incredible services there are that are out there for entrepreneurs. So I was able to find things like TaskRabbit to help me deliver packages around the city. And you find out about how FedEx really works and how to kind of streamline your practice in getting packages out. And as far as most of the other work, I just kind of said whatever I didn't know, I had to learn, and I had to learn quickly. So I never negotiated for office space before, and I looked at various alternatives from WeWorks to Regus, and then eventually found some incredible space through SL Green that's not a WeWorks, and that's not in any of the other kind of rubrics out there, but I gave myself a time limit upon which I wanted to find an office and said, you know, by X date I needed to, and I just did it. So I think what I've learned is that Cravath gave so many tools to so many people who work there. You know, it's such great training for both lawyers, but also for the administrative people who help the firm with its operations, that you learn, you know, to strive for excellence. You learn that you can get anything done that you need to get done. It's just a matter of thinking outside the box, being creative, and being disciplined about it. I think you realize that you have a lot of resources at your fingertips. So if something is outside of your purview, nothing's wrong with either saying to a client, you know, this is not what I do, I will refer this out, or being able to pick up the phone and call someone and ask an expert a question. And I find that there are so many resources out there, and you've been put into a good position by spending, you know, many years at a place where you're trained to be resourceful and problem solve and do whatever it takes to do a good job for your client.
Let me ask you, how difficult was it to build a practice and get clients?
You know, it was an interesting experience for me. I was very fortunate. The American Lawyer did a piece, and Law Dragon also did one when I was leaving the firm. And because of that, a lot of people knew that I had planned to leave and write a book. And I received phone calls the next day from a number of firms, including one in California, that said, you know, we want to come visit you. And these were significant sized firms. So I was very fortunate. And I've been busy really since the day I opened up my practice. But having said that, I think that it didn't happen overnight, in that for many, many years, I've been working in legal marketing. And so I've known people, and I've always been involved in the Legal Marketing Association, which I can't speak more highly about. I've always networked, but not in the sense that I'm trying to network to find another job or find clients. But I've always just enjoyed getting to know these wonderful people who are involved in the legal practice. And so I think by doing that, by being in this for so many years, people knew who I was, and that's maybe why they were comfortable picking up the phone. So I used to keep a sign in my office that said, opportunity doesn't knock. And I think you make your own opportunities, in that you have to be out there and you have to be getting to know the community and you have to be giving back all the time, because it makes you better at what you do, and you have connections that really become, you know, your business. And so I think this was a good example of practicing what you preach. I think there are lawyers that do this all the time, and that's one of the
the key things I love about, you know, the Rainmakers that I spoke with, that they have a network that goes beyond their doors, and they don't sit behind their desk and eat three meals a day behind their desk. They're out and talking to people. And I think that that does bear you well later on.
Well, that's when you really figure out the power of networking, right? And treating people well, you know, that really pays off because they're happy to refer you or hire you. So, you know, it's definitely very important. Absolutely. So are there any particular rainmakers out there that you admire? And what about the way they operate do you admire about them?
Again, that's just a great question. You know, there were so many people in the process, especially of writing the book, that I really admire. Jeff Klein, who heads the employment litigation practice at Weil Gotshal, is an incredible rainmaker. And I've spoken with him for the book. And, you know, at the very core of his success is that he's simply an outstanding lawyer. And I think that's the most important thing in rainmaking, is to really hone your craft first and foremost. But as he describes it, and what I love is that he describes this also when he's working with younger partners and other lawyers, is that marketing is a muscle and you need to practice it. You know, that personal business development needs to be worked on a consistent basis, that you can't just say, okay, I'm going to do this once a week or once a month, but you need to constantly have it as part of your practice. And I think this whole idea of marketing as a muscle that needs to be used is just a brilliant way of thinking about it. So I thought he was terrific. David Bernstein, who's the chair of Debevoise's IP practice, is also, again, fantastic lawyer, handles these clients for very well-known brands and companies, but he has a unique way of connecting with his clients and always going the extra mile, really knowing them as individuals. And I thought that was superb. And there are lawyers that I've just seen in practice over the years, you know, so that Evan Chesler at Cravath, I think, is the gold standard, not only because, again, you know, his skills, I've never seen anyone prepare for trial in the same hyper-focused way as Evan, and his track record for winning cases is really unparalleled. But in addition to that talent, he's very attuned to his clients, his people, and really cares about their well-being as well as their success in business. And in his case, again, it's that combination of talent. For him, it's a rare talent, and this intuition and hard work that adds up to being a lawyer who clients really adore. And again, there are other lawyers out there that I've just gotten to know over the years, especially the lawyers at Princeton and Elkins, I think, are incredible. Scott Wolf, Mark Kelly, David Ullman, Keith Fullenweider. Some of these people work in Texas, some of them work in New York, but again, they're just so good with clients that that's really why they get the business that they get, is that their clients love them. So there's a lot to be said. I think the commonalities are being very good at what you do and also being so attuned to your clients' needs and really going that extra mile.
I love it. I could listen to you talk all day long, but unfortunately, we have run out of time. So hopefully we can get you on the show sometime in the future and continue this conversation, because you really do have such wonderful stories, and, you know, the people that you spoke to, you know, in terms of your career, but also writing this book, it's just fascinating. So before I let you go, is there one actionable takeaway or one piece of advice that you would have for our listeners? As you know, most of our listeners are professionals in legal marketing. What would you say to them that you have learned or something that you would advise them?
You know, I think it's something that I learned both in the people, from the people who I interviewed, but also just from my own experience. And whether you're talking about a law firm or legal practice or your own career, is that you need to take steps to be in charge of what you're doing. And that means kind of knowing your weaknesses and getting coaching or help if you need it, but also really to think about the future and to stick your neck out and to do things that are different and unique. A lawyer a long time ago, and I don't even remember where they were, had told me that you shouldn't want to be the long blade of grass sometimes, that you shouldn't want to stick your neck out and be noticed, because people would kind of look at you and notice that you were different. But I believe that's changed. That was many years ago. I think you do want to differentiate yourself And more importantly than that, I think you want to create your own path. So I think it is important to take steps to really hone your craft, even before you think about marketing yourself. You know, get to be good at what you do.
I love it. That's fabulous advice. All right. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show. All of your information, including your website, will be on the show notes.
And guys, I can also mention, because I wouldn't be a good marketer if I didn't, want to get the book, it's at,
I was about to say that.
They can order it online on PLI's website, or they can just go to www.pli.edu/best practices, because the book is called Best Practices in Law Firm Business Development and Marketing.
Fabulous. All right. Well, we'll put all of that information on the show notes so that people can get right to it. And I can't wait to read it myself. So thank you again for being in the show. It's been fabulous. We would definitely love to have you back in the future. Let us know how the book has been received and what feedback you've gotten. For those of you that listen, thank you so much. If you enjoy the show and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and make sure you don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to some of our past podcasts that have been fantastic. Deborah, thank you again, and see you soon.